Mr. Chair, unfortunately, I'm also going to have to leave the council somewhere in the list, but I will return.
Being the case of this May, on the agenda for today, we are going to be dealing with the briefing by the department on the issue of illegal mining, and we will then deal with questions of clarity, but also we'll deal with the consideration of the two sets of May, which is the 26th and the 2nd of May. No? No, I'm sitting next to Ayanda. So bear with me. So it is my follower will understand much better. No, you can't fire her. It's a serious offense. Now, those are the issues. I'm not sure with the allowance of the committee if it needs to be whether now. I also received a letter from Honorable Lorena, which I will summarize, except if when we remember to feel that we deal with it now or towards the end, especially in the context of the fact that there is a 45 million, if I use the word disappearance, not in a negative way, that Honorable Lorena wants it there. But in essence, it's about an appointment in the department that they raised concerns about, which unfortunately, as the chair, I have to take it in the committee. And then the committee will then provide direction on how to deal with it. But if it refers to me, it then becomes a matter for the committee. I'm not sure, I don't want to read the letter without first getting a sense of how we're going to handle that matter. But if honorable members say that I must read that and deal with it, dispense with it now, or we deal with the agenda as it has been prepared, and then we deal with the letter at the tail end. Honorable Mande.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to support the drafted agenda to be adopted as outlined by the Honorable Chair, but would also like to move for Honorable Lorimer's letter to be accommodated. So if I may ask the Honorable Chair to dispense of it now before we proceed with the agenda, particularly if he is going to be taking leave for 45 minutes, I think we should afford him the opportunity for the letter to be read in his presence. Thank you.
A second, Mr. Chair. Okay.
The letter reads as follows. I will forget. Mr. S. Lucy, for Chairperson, Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources. Dear Mr. Lucy, for possible irregular appointment of Deputy Director General. Recent reports that the Minister of Mineral Resources, Mosebenzi Zwane, has appointed his Chief of Staff, Seipati Dlamini, as the new Deputy Director General of Mineral Regulations are deeply concerning. These reports suggest that Mr. Zwane did not follow the due process before appointing Ms. Dlamini. It is further understood that Ms. Dlamini previously served as a financial officer in the Free State Agricultural Department and was involved in an irregular payment made to a Gupta-linked company for a Free State Dairy project. I therefore request that you summon the minister to account to the committee for the appointment by outlining precisely the procedures that were followed in this appointment. Given the current cloud of scandal surrounding the minister and his relationship with the Gupta family, it is vital that he accounts to Parliament and explain how and why this appointment was made. I trust that my request will be given due and proper consideration, and I look forward to your reply. Regard. That ends. Signed, Mr. Lorima MP, DA Shadow Minister of Mineral Resources. Although a public committee telephone or cell number remains confidential until I'm allowed to read it in public, but the cell number is attached. That is the gist of the letter, honorable members, that I have at my disposal. I did meet honorable Lorima, and I stated that in my view, because this is a letter that relates to accounting to the committee or to parliament, I will then table the letter to the committee to then make a decision on the basis of that. So that is why I was then saying. The difficulty though was that if I had read the letter without the committee saying so, it would have been something else. So the matter is at your disposal. We can then get a sense how honorable members feel that we need to handle the issue going forward. Honorable Mandela, Honorable Matlala.
Thank you, Chair. I must thank you for reading and bringing to our attention as the committee the letter that is the author, the Honorable Lorima. I believe as the letter is written in terms of inquiry of appointments in the department to the minister, we all as members of this portfolio committee have access directly to the minister. But for Honorable Lorima's sake, I would suggest and recommend, Honorable Chair, that you forward the letter to the minister's office. Unfortunately, the minister is here with us, and it would be good for you, Honorable Chair, to send the letter to the minister, who will then be able to give Honorable Lorima a comprehensive reply. But I think, Honorable Chair, I must share my own disappointments on this letter. You know, the wording and the manner it's drafted. Irregular payments made to a Gupta-linked company. That is concerning, particularly coming from an honorable member of this committee to write such unsubstantiated things, putting them on a letter. But also, Honorable Chair, to even say that he requests you to summon the minister, it's uncalled for. And I think it's ought to be looked at as we engage with one another in this committee. We must always uphold one another's dignity, respect one another, and not be referring to scandals surrounding the minister. I, for one, seated in this room, I don't know of any scandal that is associated with the minister. You know, and therefore, to hear an honorable member putting onto a letter that there is a cloud of scandals surrounding the minister. It's very disappointing, Honorable Chair. But I know for the past we come with, some of us may still be stuck in the past mentality. But I hope that these things will be proven wrong. And I would just want to recommend that, Honorable Chair, this matter be forwarded to the Minister's Office for a comprehensive response. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to make some follow-up on what the Honorable Madiba has said with regard to the letter written to the Minister through the committee. That, one, the committee does not appoint officials of the department. Two, the committee cannot fire officials from the department. Three, that is the responsibility of the authority, the minister, to appoint officials if so needs. Four, Chair, will request, I'm not sure as to whether how is the constitution saying about the committees, but I would suggest that, of course, the letter must be forwarded to the minister to get for Mr. Lorimer to get a comprehensive response from the department, in particular the minister, because the letter is directly directed to the minister. For the last one, Chair, the minister must not respond from the letter now in this committee. The relevant member, Honorable Lorimer, who has written a letter to the minister, he will get a response from the minister with the time that the minister will have, if there is a need for him to respond to the letter. We are not forcing the minister to respond to the letter written to him by Honorable Lorimer. That will be the responsibility of the minister. Either he responds or he does not respond, that is his responsibility. As the committee will never force the minister to respond to letters written to him. We'll never force him. That is the authority. Yes, for the authority either to respond or not to respond. The last one, Chair, I'm not sure whether it will be possible, but in fact we can't summon the opposition to actually account to the manner in which is written this letter, the outcome, the things that is in the letter. Of course, it's so disgusting because if the Honorable Lorimer has information regarding relationship of the minister with the business people of this country, he must substantiate and give those substantiated to the minister or any other authority that is relevant to. So, Chair, I would suggest that we, the committee, forward the letter to the minister. Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think we need to remember that in this committee, we are supposed to be performing oversight on behalf of the people of South Africa. The suggestion that I have some kind of private correspondence or appointment with the minister misses the point. This needs to be done publicly. To deny allegations of scandal surrounding the DMR at the moment is to deny reality. If anybody listens or reads the media, they will know that a number of contentious points are in the public mouth at the moment. This should be an opportunity that is welcomed by the minister, because it's an opportunity to clear up and assure us that the process of the appointment of the CDG was completely above board. Any move to hide the minister from accounting for this will only increase the shadow over this affair. We need to decide as a committee whether we're interested in oversight or not. And I think it would be sad if the committee automatically took the side of the executive rather than the side of the people.
Sure, thanks, Chair. Look, party political partisanship aside, we must face facts. A letter has been written, the minister is here to answer the question, and it is in normal practice of this committee that questions are asked and they're answered. That is one. Two, I think to also make allegations that the letter is misconstruing or misrepresenting facts, I think it's disingenuous to put it mildly, because just last week, Chair, we were sitting here discussing a article that was written in the papers, and we were making decisions based on that article. I think it's disingenuous to then say that we can't make decisions or write letters or make points based on what is hearsay in the papers. And I think it is correct that the letter has been written. If there's a concern, that concern must be dealt with, and this is the proper platform in which it should be. To then say that the minister has a right to not answer or to answer, I think is to then delegate the responsibility of this committee to something else. We're here so that the minister and the department can answer questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The letter is a reasonably straightforward letter. It deals with one single appointment, and it gives a basis for the possible concerns and the concerns that are raised in the media and from other quarters. The minister is here. He's alleged to have made the appointment. Someone said something the other day quite striking, and I don't want to overstress the point, but there's something that says the truth will set you free. So if he did make the appointment, then acknowledge if it didn't say so. If the basis is a well-founded, well-grounded one, he has the opportunity to state so and give his reasons without being alleged to have misconstrued the facts or for any other possible conceived reason. So I would implore the minister to make use of the opportunity, indicate whether he made the appointment, didn't make the appointment, the reasons if he does make the appointment, and whether the process was followed. If the process was followed, well, then we can all make our deductions as to the appropriateness or otherwise of the appointment. But it's a straightforward issue, with due respect, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if I had heard Honourable Mandela and Honourable Matlala, they don't dispute the letter or the response. The suggestion was give the minister that letter so that he can answer. And I will support that because the letter was written. So we shouldn't allow a verbal response. Let's allow written response also. Because I have never yet in this committee, us as honorable members, discussing appointment of officials in the department. It's for the first time we hear this. But we don't dispute this. We are saying, let's give the minister opportunity to go and answer that letter with a written response. That's all. I think honorable members, I mean this out of proportion. Even the article that Honorable Mukwena is talking about that was discussed last week, it was not an opening remarks, Chairperson. It was not something that was not, that was, it was your opening remarks saying that we shouldn't represent the committee, the views outside the committees. and that was not written. It was just you opened the meeting. So let's go for written response as the letter has been written to you. Thank you.
Okay. Can I make this? I note Honorable Mandela, I note Honorable Lorima, I note Honorable Jasta, I note Honorable Honorable Tigini. You know, let me start from the starting point. The risk is very high, and I'm making this to all of us as committee members. I always say it's very important when you're in a meeting to know what you're doing. Because one day we'll sit here and debate an example, that one would have made an example, and then debate that example without dealing with the real issue. But also, one of the things that I've learned, I don't want a debate that starts to question each other's credentials or bona fides. Because to me, it sends an argument of blackmail that the reason you are raising this thing is because of this, and therefore a person is not free to air the views. In a committee, all of us, let's allow the free flow of discussion without attaching suspicions or casting doubt on the validity of the argument of an individual. Superior ideas surely will not emerge out of, with due respect, honorable members, seeking to freak the other one not to raise and express views. But let's deal with the gist of the letter so that we can all be clear on this. The issue we're dealing with, and I think this is the most, we're missing the point. The issue we're dealing with is the letter written, inquiring, and information. The committee has to decide how does it handle the letter. How do we handle the letter? The letter, amongst other things, includes or involves the committee. That's why we place it. If Honorable Lorima said, I'm sending it to the minister, CC, it then involves the committee. It then means the committee must engage on how best to handle the letter. Unfortunately, in the discussion, members don't clarify that issue. How do you handle the letter? Let's assume the minister was not here. So that in future, honorable members, we don't set precedents on the basis that there is something that has to be done. Don't set precedents. Let me read the letter so that we can understand it. It says, first it makes this, I don't want to say allegation, it makes this assumption. It says it's an appointment, which is, it talks about the consequences. Then it says, this report suggests that the minister did not follow the due processes before appointing Mrs. Lamine. That's what it says. Then it goes further. It then says, where is this thing? Where it talks about a comprehensive report, response, somewhere. It says, I therefore request that you summon the minister to account to the committee for the appointment by outlining precisely the procedures that were followed in this appointment. Let's leave the cloud given, the cloud that we're talking about, because I don't want us to deal with many issues in one. Now, the first issue is that in the committee, that item, that's why I started to say, where do we locate the letter? That item was not on the agenda today, for starters. Secondly, if there is a written submission, it doesn't mean, and I always say this, we must draw a distinction between the pace and what we want to establish as a fact. We may only be debating whether we want the answer now or we want the answer, but the reality that there is a written letter to the chair, which the committee must take into consideration. The letter doesn't say, then it says summon, which is another discussion and for another day again. Because you can only request the minister to come and explain. In the event the minister is resisting to come to the committee and appear in front of the committee, we can then summon the minister. Because that word summon could be interpreted to suggest that there is resistance to appear. Any person, the committee has got a right to summon any person that it feels it needs to account if that individual is not willing to come to the committee. That is why in the rules it also caters for that in the event you summon the individual, you take liability for the cost if that individual is summoned to appear here. I think I can explain again. When I came here, there was an issue that we're dealing with in New was it Umtata away? There was an issue, but in the Eastern Cape, which were then told that if those people were not willing to come to the committee, but if the committee is summoning them, it must then be prepared to take liability for costs. So that is, but I'm just saying it may not be the correct word for today. Now, can we leave these frills? Because we'll end up disagreeing only on the frills, not on the substance of the what is contained as a message. For an example, I'll be honest. As a member of the committee, I may have my own views, even about the minister inside, but they remain my views. Now, when we create an impression, now I'll be all frank and open, Honorable Minister and Honorable Member. If we want to be sensational, we can sit here and debate about the Guptas if we want to debate that issue, whether it has it. But where is it going to take us to? The issue is that there is a concern about an irregular appointment. Secondly, there is a written request. Now, we shouldn't then put ourselves in an awkward situation where we may also be interested to know what had happened, but we may not agree with the actual contents of what then accompanies the interest in understanding what could have happened. Now, I think then the honorable members, that I was just trying to put us back. The honorable members will say, you have a letter in front of you, Chair. This letter requires an information for the committee. Now I'm asking this question. Generally, in the committee, when you provide information like they're going to do now, even in the oversight where we go, except if it's a question that emanates from the report that is given, that's a different story. But generally, we always argue and say, if even in our oversight, if you come and make a presentation and you don't give us a document that justifies what you are submitting to us, then we won't even start to allow you to make that presentation because we want it in writing. Now, the honorable members will say, no, you've got the letter, Chair. Take the letter to the minister. We want the minister to come to the committee, report on this issue that is being raised by honorable members. Let that be submitted in writing. I would have then said, rather than to reduce it then and make it Honorable Lorimar's letter, that report, when then his minister has given a report, let that report come back to the committee. As a chair, you read the report. Honorable members at that moment must then take a decision on how to handle the matter. If then we go the route, I don't know, I want to say, if we go the route of Honorable Matar, say, no, it's not our territory. We deal with that issue at that moment when the report is given to the committee. The minister may be present, or we may say, because he's here, please be present at the time when we are going to read your response. Honorable Mande.
Thank you.
Is your 45 minutes beginning? Okay.
Honorable Chair, I initially requested and moved for the letter to be given to the minister so that Honorable Lorimar can be furnished with a comprehensive response. It cannot be a committee issue to be dealing with unsubstantiated statements of irregular payments made to Gupta Link companies in the Free State Dairy Project. And the honourable member knows that to put such a thing to even a committee, he must substantiate that, honourable chair. But also the manner this letter is put, you know, I'm very particular to language, to summon the minister to account to the committee. Never mind that the minister is seated here with us. This letter is not sent to him, sent to you as the chair. So he's probably also hearing about this letter now in the committee. I therefore do not want to associate the committee, honorable chair, with the cloud of scandals surrounding the minister, because we don't know of any scandal surrounding the minister as this committee. We have never said and discussed scandal. So I think honorable members are just playing to the theatrics and should not draw the committee into that. It is my humble request, honorable chair, as I initially moved, I move again that this letter be forwarded to the honorable minister for honorable Lorimer to receive a comprehensive response on this. And therefore, we will deal with the matter as a committee once Lorimer has been, honorable Lorimer has been afforded a response, which I do believe that the honorable minister will make available also to you as the chair in the committee. Thank you.
I just wanted to support what honorable Mofolo was saying, honorable chair, because you cannot run away from the fact that the letter is addressed to you as the chairperson of the committee. That means, therefore, it is the letter for the committee. Then, second, the proposal that the letter, firstly, I thought you were seeking the way which the committee should deal with the letter, not that we discuss the letter now. Then, say, the proposal by Honorable Mofolo that the letter must be given the attention by the ministry, and then we get a written response as a committee, then discuss it again when we get that response, as you were saying, as a committee. I just wanted to second that, that we focus on our agenda for today.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We still maintain that the minister is here. I even think there's a moral obligation of the minister to answer, even without the request of the minister, of the portfolio committee, rather. But that's up to him to do whether he thinks it's necessary. But what is very important, Mr. Chair, it is not something over which we do not have oversight responsibility of. What I'm trying to say is it involves, in particular, the department. It involves the credibility of the department. It is not a political matter between the minister and Joe Soap and the public about what he has done or not done. It revolves around an appointment of a very senior official in the department. And that's where the problem lies. It is, has to do directly with the department, with the credibility of the department, and everyone now, henceforth, is going to think, how is Mr. Mzinza involved in this appointment? Is Mr. So-and-so involved in this appointment? Has Mr. Mzinza known as the acting director general? All these things come to the fore because it is not a purely political matter. It is a matter which we directly have a oversight responsibility. And for that particular reason, it should be referred to the minister for a written reply. But we should also be afforded the opportunity to reply here today. We should be given the opportunity to say, Minister, do you want to reply? And if he does not want to reply, well, then we all make our deduction from that. If he does reply and it's in a way which is acceptable, well, then we take it in that regard and we make our deduction following from that. But it would be a cop-out process to say, well, Minister is here, don't give him the opportunity, and I think it would be a bad move, if I may call it by lack of a better word, for the Minister not to make use of the opportunity, because here we all together, we can indicate, yeah, done it, well, done it.
Thank you, Chair. Look, we must not move from the naivety that we don't have political views here. We come here as political parties with specific political views. And those political views we thresh out in a committee of this nature. And so to then say that we must not express political views or views that we have taken from society, it's naive. We must express those things because they are precisely the reason why we're here. But having said that, I think also it's also not correct to say that we're not responsible for how departments appoint people. It's a governance issue. If you're saying the appointment was irregular, if there's any indication that the appointment was irregular, it's a governance issue. And it directly impacts on the committee. And I think it would have been a perfect opportunity for the minister to then say, no, it's not irregular, because we followed processes, we did this, we did that, we did that. That would have been the proper thing. But seeing that there's the resistance from parts of this committee, I would then concretely suggest that, and also before I made the suggestion, I wanted to say, Chair, that the letter was written to the committee, specifically to the committee, and therefore it must be dealt with by the committee. I don't understand the suggestion that it must then be taken to the minister, and the minister must then privately respond to it privately to the person that wrote the letter. It was written to the committee, and the committee must deal with it. But in light of the fact that there's resistance in this committee, I would then concretely suggest that we forward the letter to the minister, and then in the next sitting of this committee, we then deal with it as an agenda in the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Chair, you see, your guidance, Chair, was really utmost important. Your summary was really closing this matter, Chair. Really, the culture of this committee is what everyone is talking about here. That's how we normally operate. But I think, in all fairness to each and everyone, we are really politicians, we need to debate each and everything. But also, we normally discuss issues that follow the due process in whatever we are critical of. We came here with an agenda item which was very clear to each and everyone. And therefore, Chair, as I'm saying, when you do your summary, it was quite correctly and it was guiding the Chair. The letter, the minister is going to see the letter for the first time. He does not know the contents of the letter. Now, really, let's go home and come back in that next meeting, and then we have the report in our hands, as we normally does issues in this committee. You see, the problem we face with here, we normally trust each other, we normally work with each other all the time. Yes, really don't move away from that. That's what I like in this committee. We are like a family, wives who are coming from different parties all the time. The issue of appointment will be answered. It will be tabled here, will be dealt with. We can't deal with something that we don't know, we didn't see it. But we are happy with the letter that we received. We are going to make sure that we attend that particular matter in the manner that we wish to. That's where we are, Chair. So I'm trying to say, Chair, in your summary, in the first debate, you really summarized very nice, and I wish you carry on with that process. It's assisting us, because all of us, we don't differ much. We want the matter to be dealt with.
Then, beginning, that's what I was trying to tell Honorable Member. The issue is the process. What is the process issue? It's nice to remind you, with due respect, Honorable Member, and I know you may understand. When we brought something here, Honorable Members refused. They said they were not. For that matter, it was in what you call a matter of the right. The state diamond trade. When they presented, they were told, look, we hear what you say, but as a committee, we want it in writing. They submitted it in writing. Then when they submitted, we were told, you are not responding to the text of what was the request. We hear what you're talking about, all this. We said, I remember, we said we want the names of the companies that are trading with you. We want the amounts and so forth, because what you are responding to, it's not. The difference that honorable members are saying, that's a different state. The letter doesn't say, it says me as a chair, I must ask, I don't want to use the word someone, I must ask the minister to come to the committee and explain on that matter. The fact of the matter is that the minister, as is currently here, is not coming on the basis of what this letter suggests what I must do. Now, I think Honorable Mokoena is exactly almost the same thing that I'm saying. The only difference with Honorable Mokoena is now putting time frame, which I don't think the committee will reject it, to say the minister in the next meeting must bring that written response, and then as a committee, we deliberate on the response submitted. I don't think that there is a difference between that. Then we allow the other processes to follow. I don't want to go to other issues, Honorable Mokoena. But I will tell you, if we're acting in that fashion, that would be very nice in this committee. More than, but let's leave it for another day. No, don't worry. Let's leave it. Don't worry.
I think you and I agree in that. I was saying that we're not here to discuss the political issues here. It's the governance issues that we're dealing with here. If there's an irregularity, it must be dealt with. Whether there are Gupta issues and so on and so forth, that's a thing to be dealt with in the National Assembly.
No, that's why I said if we're working in that fashion, that would be very nice in this committee. But I think the issue is how the committee associates itself. The committee says it only associates itself with regards to the specific item in terms of seeking clarity of information. The issues that then accompanies it. It's what the committee is uncomfortable, and therefore it doesn't want to associate itself with the actual issues that are not necessarily on the substantive matter. Can we then leave and say the minister, with all due respect, is going to respond? Fortunately now he understands the substantive issues. The issues between other friends can only be matters that are handled with the honorable members concerned. But let me just make this thing. No, Honorable Schmidt, I'll be honest and frank with you. The issue was on the basis of what was said with regards to the decision that this committee has taken. It was not on the basis of what was flying there. We sometimes ignore those things that fly there. But when the committee issues are then taken in a different context, that's why I said, I even allowed honorable members to make comments on that issue. It was on the basis of the common understanding on how, for instance, if we arrive at this decision now, it's on the basis of we arrive at this decision because we want to be procedural. It had nothing to do with what was written in the meter and so forth. It was about the committee. So if anything is written in the meter, there is no way we will allow it to come to the committee, except if ourselves have got concrete substantiated issues, then we've got the right to do so. I just thought I must draw that distinction. But Honorable Minister, if there was that thing, I would be asking for a ceremony of handing over the letter so that it can be seen that I forwarded the letter. This is the letter, Honorable Minister. Just forget about the scratches where I scratched it simply because I was doing my duty as a chair. The preference of the committee is that if a response can be received in our next meeting, it will be highly appreciated, and then the committee will only deliberate on the basis of what we have presented for itself. I don't want to give you time, Minister, to respond, although honorable members were asking for your voluntary exercise. But can we go to the real issue, which is a report on illegal mining, measures in place in terms of implementation in combating illegal mining. The matter is with you. No.
No, no, thanks, Chair. Let me just confirm that I've received the letter. I will deal with it appropriately. So members should not worry.
You confirm that you will reply by next week Wednesday, Minister?
Yeah. Now I've received the letter, Chair. I will deal with it appropriately. Except to say I'm always with the committee. So members should not worry. I need not be summoned. I'll always make time when I have time to be present and deal with the issues that are there to be dealt with appropriately. Chair, getting to the business of the day, I think that's what you asked me to do. Let me take this opportunity, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the members from different media houses. I can see there are many today. Officials from the department and officials that are helping us in this committee. As a department, we welcome the regular interactions we have with the portfolio committee on matters relating to the minerals and upstream petroleum sectors. We appreciate the inputs and recommendations from honorable members which guide us in the execution of our mandate. Chairperson, notable strides have been made to combat illegal mining and trafficking precious metals and diamonds by government and the relevant stakeholders as a result of the implementation of the appropriate measures to combat the illicit activities. However, we continue to be greatly concerned with the illegal mining activities, including the recent accident in the George Harrison Park Museum or Heritage Site in Langlachte. Also, the emerging illegal chrome mining, as well as the mining of sand without legal authorization in the respective provinces, indicate that further measures should be implemented to ultimately combat the illegal activities. Hence, we call on people to desist in conducting the illicit operations and also for the public to assist in the fight to ultimately eradicate the activities as they lead to the loss of life, environment, degradation, and significant loss of revenue to the country and the mining sector. Our government has introduced legislation, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act of 2002, Act No. 28, which promotes equitable access to the nation's minerals and compels the mines to, among other things, rehabilitate mining sites. Prior to our democratic dispensation, there was no legislation compelling the mines to rehabilitate. As a result, the state inherited a legal sort of derelict and ownerless mines which require substantial financial resources to effectively rehabilitate. Unfortunately, some illegal mining activities do occur at these mines, with Gauteng and the Free State provinces being amongst the most affected. The majority of illegal gold mining activities in these provinces are surrounded by industrial and residential infrastructure. The continued illicit mining activities threaten to undermine the country's economic prosperity, investment opportunities, as well as social and security policies. Hence, the department is collaborating with law enforcement agencies and other stakeholders to implement measures which will ultimately lead to the eradication of the illicit activities. We wish to commend the law enforcement agencies for arresting major crime syndicates which are fueling these illegal activities. We believe our continued collective efforts will yield the desirable results. Honorable members, I will now hand over to the acting DG and his team to deliver a detailed presentation in this regard, and we look forward to your collective wisdom in assisting us to make even greater progress in combating illegal mining. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We'll be taking the Honourable Members through a presentation on the measures that we as a department, working together with the other stakeholders, have been implementing to ultimately deal with the challenges that were of illegal mining. The presentation outline will just go through the background, where we'll just touch in summary what are some of the issues that we are dealing with, and then dwell more in detail on the measures that we've been implementing as government and stakeholders to ultimately try and combat this matter. They involve the promotion of legitimate mining, the reputation of derelict and onerous mines, as Minister indicated, sealing of open shafts and holes, the policing and law enforcement, this working together with the law enforcement agencies. We'll also touch, Honourable Members, on the challenges, the key challenges that we still experience, although Minister has indicated that there's been some improvement, but there are still key challenges that we're experiencing, and we will close by touching on some of the measures that we'll continuously implement to take this up. Honourable Members, as Minister indicated, we are still greatly concerned with the illicit activities, illicit mining activities, more particularly with the death of three illegal miners at the George Harrison Heritage Site in Langlaagte recently, as a result of an underground fire. They succumbed to exposure to carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. So for us, the great concern. The incident has again put the spotlight on the challenges of illicit mining activities, not only in Gauteng, but also in other provinces. In the Free State, mainly the illicit activities that are taking place in old mines, but they use existing mines to access those areas. And also in the Mpumalanga area, mainly you'll find that there is some form of gold illegal mining and some form of subsistence coal mining as well taking place there. Limpopo recently, we just recently experienced this problem, and mainly with the chrome mining in the Sekhukhune area and some sand mining in some parts of the rivers in the Limpopo area. We've been experiencing this challenge. In Northern Cape, mainly the challenges had to do with illegal diamond mining. In Tiger's Eye, we're working together with the police to deal with it. The Eastern Cape is mainly sand mining, and similarly with the KwaZulu-Natal province, mainly sand mining. The Portugal Committee recently also went to the Free State, and we really appreciate the oversight role played by the PPC, and they were also taking through the challenges that we're experiencing, especially with the gold mines in that area on illegal mining. I've talked about we are experiencing illegal coal now. We are experiencing illegal coal mining, coal and sand mining in the respective provinces. Slide 4, Honourable Chairperson. It shows the photos of photos taken by the protesting of the mine rescue service when they do the rescue of the illegal miners underground in the old derelict and owner's mine. On the left-hand side of the slide, you'll see the proto team going to where the illegal miners have been trapped. But what we wanted to amplify with these with these photos is you can clearly see that they are working in very dangerous area. Because if you look at the hanging wall, it's not supported. You know, the area is not supported. And over time, because these are mines that have been mined in the 1960s, they have converged. So you can see that the space is very confined as well in both photos. You can clearly see on the right-hand side in some areas how they try to traverse to go to those areas. Obviously, they are putting a lot of risk at their own lives. And I think that's one of the challenges that MRS has brought to our attention, although we do, because they are the ones who have the right expertise in the country in this field. One of the key areas that they are saying to us that we are helping, but know that we are putting our proto team members' lives at risk as well in doing this, you know, because it's not a normal mine. So I think the great concern for us that the illegal miners, they also put their lives at higher risk to get to this. On slide five shows the recent challenges that we are facing in the Sikhuni area. It shows a stretch of about 14 kilometers next to a provincial road there, where bulk chrome illegal mining is taking place or has been taking place. I'll touch on later on what have we been doing together with law enforcement to deal with this particular matter. Similarly, on slide 6, it basically shows by the mountainside where the chrome outcrops and they are taking off. You can actually see that it's well organized. They're using, you know, big machinery for this to take place. And on slide 7, it shows it speaks to illegal sand mining. Yes, we do also experience the illegal sand mining, but mainly the illegal sand mining that we're experiencing in the provinces, it has to do with subsistence mining, where people will take sand by the riverside, you know, to go and sometimes they build houses. But there are those who are doing business out of this, which are greatly concerned about. And we'll touch on what we are doing to deal with it. And slide 8 shows the environmental degradation that is also caused by the illegal sand mining, as you can clearly see on the slide. Now, in terms of the measures we've been implementing as a department, to combat illegal mining, we have acknowledged the fact that as a department or as government, we cannot do this alone. Given the legacy that the minister has highlighted, to say there's a lot of derelict and owners' mines, you know, that we've been rehabilitating, but we're still having challenges with those. So we're working together with the mining sector, the municipalities, the unions, and also the community members. We're working together with them. We've established forums where we engage on what measures can we implement to deal with these challenges that we're facing. Also, government has established a national coordinating body, which we call the NCSMT, given the illicit and the criminal activities that are taking place as a result of this. So it's made up of all the law enforcement agencies, including ourselves. We participate there. Intelligence also is part of that. Home Affairs is there as well. We are helping a lot. DERCO is also helping there. The SAPS obviously is also helping in the activities and operations that are running. As a department, together with the stakeholders, we have adopted a three-pronged approach to say where those areas can be mined, we promote legitimate mining. In other words, we will assist in issuing the mining permits. We've issued them, I'll talk to them where we've issued them. And we also do rehabilitation and the sealing of the hose and the shaft. And lastly, we work together with the police to do in terms of the policing and the enforcement. Initially, with the, if honorable members can recall, initially the biggest challenge that we had is that the people who have been arrested were the lower people, the people who were doing digging. And they were normally released on fines of 100 rand. But that has improved since then, up to now. So we'll actually talk, although there's still a bigger challenge there. In terms of the promotion of legitimate mining, we give opportunities for small-scale mining to take place. As I indicated, we've issued mining rights, mainly in the Gauteng area. We've issued in the Guruleni area, where we've issued to a mining company. They are mining the outcrop. Outcrop is where the mineral with value it strikes the surface. You know, that's we call it an outcrop. So we've given a mining right or a payment for them to remove that outcrop, because that's where some of the illegal miners will operate. We've also issued in the Roodepoort area, just to touch on the illicit mining in Gauteng. It mainly happens around the old mining companies, all the way from Ekurhuleni to the West Rand, the Roodepoort area. Because that's where they used to be an outcrop restaurants all the way to that area. So if you go along that line I was talking about, you'll see that there's a lot of dumps, you know, these big slime dumps. You'll actually see them on the major highway, you know. However, there's also significant infrastructure that is built in terms of residential and industrial areas. So wherever you see those dumps, including next to residential areas, you must know that they used to be an underground coal mine in that area. It has been sealed off in some of the areas, but some of them have been reopened. So we are looking at those areas to find a way of dealing with them. We are not only issuing mining rights or permits on the outcrops, but also on the slime dams as well. Because if you go around those major highways, you'll actually see in some parts they're taking off the slime dams because of the favorable coal currency. So we are also doing that. Now slide 11 shows one of the sites that we've issued the mining right on. It's where the mine has started their operation to remove the outcrop. Slide 12, it on both pictures it shows the site where it was. What has happened here, they will go around the dumps and take gravel, or they'll go and dig at the outcrops and take the gravel and come and process it next to the river. So what we've done, working together with the mining companies, we have rehabilitated those areas. Now, it was the before and the after picture. And where the place has been rehabilitated, together with the municipalities, we encourage that there must be infrastructure built on top of that area. Because our past experience that if you don't build, they'll go back because they know that the topsoil might still contain coal-bearing material, so they'll go and dig once again. So you'll actually see that even if you drive along the highway, for example, if you drive from on the N3 southbound, when you go on the off-ramp that goes to this small, there's a small airport in that area. You can surely see that they've taken off the dump and now they've built big industrial areas as well. So if you go, including on the M1, just behind the Gold Reef City as well, you see there's some work that is being done on the N1 northbound before you get to the 40th Avenue off ramp to Florida. You actually see they're taking down the dams. So where they're taking down the dams, we are saying if possible, they must also use that area for infrastructure build, and I think it will really help us moving forward. So the next slide it also shows the rehabilitation is taking. This is in the East Rand or in the Guruleni area. Slide 14 it shows the ceiling that we've worked together with the Council for Geoscience. We've requested the Council for Geoscience to help us. Progressively, it's been about 200 open shafts and holes that have been filled up to September. backed by the government, and then 80 have been filled by the mine, as indicated or demonstrated on another photo. But our biggest challenge, honourable members, is as you would have seen when we took you there last year or the other year, they will, because those underground mines that I spoke about, they are shallow mines. So what they will do, either next to that slab, the concrete slab which is there, they'll go, they'll still dig downwards, you know, until they hit the hole into underground. So I think that's the biggest challenge that we are still facing in the regarding this matter. In terms of policing, the police have been making arrests, honourable members. I think what is encouraging for us, as I said, indicated, initially what was frustrating is that they will arrest at the lower level and release people on trespassing fines of 100 rand. But now we are seeing that they are arresting at the top level. Some of mine management have been arrested because one of the mine manager was arrested at his house with gold worth about 500,000 rand. He was arrested. And some of the state officials have also been arrested by the SAPS who are involved with this particular process, because we are told that the syndicate, they are bribing not only state officials but mine officials as well. They give them significant amount of money. In fact, in the operating mines, we have been told that they don't mind to give to security personnel about 100,000 rand or more to allow them to access the underground working. You know, although the mines have over time improved on the security around the area. Some of the syndicates have also been arrested, especially in the last 3 years. We've been seeing more and more syndicates that have been arrested. The conviction rates increased from 2 months, now it goes all to about 8 years, the honorable members. Also, there was a case where the police confiscated the cash of about 750,000 rand recently in the Free State province, and gold of 9 kilogram gold, also in the Free State area. And earlier this year, there were media reports that the Hawks arrested a man with a not called gold worth about 50 million rand, concealing the engine of a vehicle which was smuggling the precious metals from Northwest to Gauteng. So I think, I mean, you can clearly see the big numbers that are being informed. In fact, last year as well, honourable members, just to remind honourable members, there was a person arrested in the Kempton Park area, involved in the trust fraud of about 435 million. Because the modus operandi now is changing. It's no longer digging only, but it's buying gold coins and mixing it with old jewelry and then claiming that from the trust. So they were, the person was arrested at the estate in Kempton Park with some old gold bearing material also at that particular house. So the law enforcement agencies, I think for us it's encouraging that they are also looking at the top level. Illegal coal mining, as I clearly indicated, we are also working with the SAPS in the Limpopo area. There have been some significant arrests that have been made. In fact, about 2 months ago, they confiscated about 21 trucks. Some of them were exporting the coal through the Mozambique route, so they stopped them in the Mpumalanga area. Also in the East Rand, they stopped about 9 trucks that were involved. So we're working together with the police in this regard. And the pictures on that follows there show the police work that is taking place as a result. However, honourable members, we do have challenges. I think the biggest challenge is that whatever we can do as a country to deal with this matter, as long as there is a market, we will never defeat the illicit activity. I think that we should really highlight to say, it's like stealing cars. I mean, if you have a market, we can improve the technology on the cars. People will find a way of you know, stealing cars as well. So we have to find a way of dealing with the market. For us, it's the biggest frustration that here in South Africa, there is legislation. There is the Diamonds Act, there is the Precious Metals Act as well, to say how do you trade in those precious stones and precious metals as well. But in other parts of the world, There's no such in other words, you can walk around with gold, nothing will happen to you. Here, if you walk around with gold without a permit, you'll be arrested, definitely, as the police have been doing, you know. But in other parts, and it's a big challenge, including in the Western countries, for that matter. It's a big, big challenge for us. Another challenge is the changing modus operandi of illegal mining. Honorable members, illegal mining was more prominent in the Free State area in the 1890s. And the way it started, they were stealing the gold in the plants, in the processing plants. And they improved the security improved in the processing plants, they went underground. And they were mining the stabilizing pillars. In other words, pillars that are left to support the hanging wall. They started to dig in that area. Now, as the security improved in those shafts, it moved to Mpumalanga, in the Barberton mine area. Because in Mpumalanga, you had at that time the old gold mines with edits. Edits were horizontal tunnels that moved into a mine. So there were about 400 over the mountainous area, if you've been to Barberton. Those mines there, together with those mines, we've sealed all those edits. We moved to Gauteng. In the East Rand and now in the West Rand. So as we move and we close this particular area, we see the changing modus operandi. As I've told now, they're claiming back. You know, it's moving away from that to another to but now it's a big challenge for us that we are working together with the stakeholders to deal with. Another challenge is, as government and the stakeholders, they are taking this action, sealing off these holes, shafts, and rehabilitation, we see violent crimes happening. You have seen cases where people have been executed, you know. And one thing that we've noted as well, if let's say you get executed next to where they were accessing the shaft, they move your body elsewhere so that law enforcement should not know where they access. So most of the time we don't know where they access where they access the underground ones, especially on the derelict ones. They hide those areas because they know, if you get to know, we'll sell it off. You know, I think it's a big challenge. Similarly with the Lang Lafter, we will sell it, but I know that they will find a way of accessing another area. Another great concern for us, as I've said, these issues are becoming violent now, is our officials have been attacked as well. The police have been attacked. Our CGS colleagues have been attacked. And my officials have been attacked because some of these guys are heavily armed, you know. As we try and seal off, because they don't want us to seal off in old working, you know. So they tend. So when we go there, we go with the police, as we've done when we are taking the honorable members to the site the other year. So I think for us that's a great concern as well. Lastly, on the slide, Chair, you know, all members, that we are greatly concerned with the human trafficking involved and illegal immigration also involved. Because, as we have also experienced in the Free State when you went there, most of the people that are doing the digging are not from South Africa. In fact, in some instances, beyond 90% who are doing the digging. But the syndicates are local, and they are also international. But the people who are doing the digging are the very desperate people who want to make a living, so to speak. You know, so I think that's also a challenge. And hence, we continue to work together with the Department of Home Affairs and DERCO, and with their respective countries as well, to try and find a way of how we deal with this issue. And also, on the next slide, I think the biggest challenge is, given the mandate of the department, you know, is to promote mining and also deal with health and safety issues. However, because there's certain areas that they are visiting, and we have to attend to as government, but we must admit that it results in significant strain on our already tight resources. We have to obviously commit the finances, we have to commit our officials who should have been, you know, doing other work, including the police as well, for that matter. So I think it's a concern for us. Another concern is that we still, as we've indicated, and then the shafts, and then they reopen them, and they open new ones. So we have to commit other resources to make sure that we reclose those holes. And also important is loss of life, because those areas are very unsafe. especially the underground ones, they are extremely unsafe. I worked at the mines, I would not work in those asbestos mines, you know, because there's no support, there's no ventilation, proper ventilation, and so, and the place is sagging, you know, it's very dangerous, you see. Some of the illegal miners have lost their lives, and if they blast underground, they also expose the legitimate workers, because if there's smoke, the legitimate workers will be exposed as well, you know. And also communities that we expose, but sometimes they use mercury to process on the rivers, and it does affect communities too, you know. But the most accidents that led to loss of life underground is mainly fire, fall of ground, and fall of ground accidents that resulted in death. They also compromised surface infrastructure, as I indicated, especially in Gauteng, right? There's a lot of infrastructure, you've seen it yourself. And most of it is on top of underground mines. But there has been a stabilizing pillar that have been left deliberately by the mines at that time to support the hanging wall. But they are mining. They are taking away those remaining pillars and the stability pillars. We are really concerned. Because some parts, it compromises the road infrastructure, it might compromise the buildings that are there. I think for us, it's a great concern. There is degradation of the environment, including water. Some say they're also using mercury, you know. But from the NCSMT, we are looking and working together with the respective departments on how to regulate better mercury. As a way forward, honorable members, we will continue to support the work of the National Coordination Strategic Management Team, which now is mainly operating at looking at the syndicate level. And also looking globally. They are assisting us in that regard, that law enforcement is. We're working together with them to strengthen the legislative framework on issues of charges and sentences of criminal syndicates. So through that committee, what we've done, we've looked at all the respective legislation, including ours, the NPRPA, you know, including the one that regulates mercury, including the court, you know, including issues of SARS as well. We've looked at all that legislation. We've looked at the home affairs legislation to say how can we tighten where we can really tighten through this process. And also through the NCCMT, honorable members, we took this matter to the UN because of the market challenges that we spoke about. You know, because the other parts of the world, this matter is not regulated. We are regulating it. And there was a resolution taken by the UN on combating transnational organized crime, because this crime also leads to other criminal activities. Because the proceeds from this are used for other criminal activities as well. So they took a resolution there for UNICRI, which is a subsidiary of UN, to assist us with us. We've been engaging through UNICRI to look at how we can work together with the respective countries that I've referred to deal with this thing. I think until we deal with the market, I don't think we'll effectively be able to deal with the challenges that we are facing. We have looked at strengthening legal provisions, as indicated, to criminalize this form of illegal mining, working together also with the justice cluster to say how do we strengthen here. We will also continue with the provincial stakeholder forum to deal with the key focus areas. And I think there's been a substantial work that has been done in those provinces, and also working together with municipalities and mine owners, land owners, on the reputation of derelict mines and the sealing of open mines. I think for us it's very important that we continue to seal and rehabilitate. If we have seen it, it's working. That's why I was saying earlier, the crimes are becoming more violent because they are fighting for territories. The territory becomes limited now as we do the dams and small refineries and jewelry shops to be identified and validity of license to be investigated through the Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator. As I've told you, that the modus operandi is changing. They are buying old jewelry and they buy the gold coins and they mix it up and they claim back. So through the regulator, we have said that we must audit these refineries and the jewelry shops to make sure that they follow the conditions that have been set for the license that are given to them. So I think that there's been some great work that has been done in that regard. We'll continue to promote legitimate mining and removal of exposed minerals, as I indicated earlier. including the gravel and the mine dumps. Honourable members have indicated, if you look the major highways in Gauteng, you'll see there is work with pressure water jets to remove the dump. But it's a lot of them, you can't do it one time. But I think as long as the gold price is favourable, we'll see more and more of those coming down. We'll also continue supporting the alignment of local and national government initiatives on assisting small-scale miners. We have our own programs that we are running as government to promote small-scale mining where we can and legitimize those operations. So, honourable members, in closing, yes, we admit this challenge is still a significant challenge that it cannot only take government to deal with. We will continue working together with the relevant stakeholders, not only locally but also internationally, to deal with this matter of illegal mining. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Babumsuza. With your exhibition naturally before the start of the actual presentation, can I give you a 10-minute stretch break and then we'll come back? Only Honourable Biginini and Honourable Lorima in this house has been stretching their legs.
If I left this and the device close to the speaker?
No problem.
Thank you. Sure.
Boy, don't make us thank you so much, Mom. Shame.
Thank you for today. Again, taking you tonight and tomorrow night.
I don't know what.
Oh, shame.
Mommy, I don't know what to do.
Spiel muss ich ja. Games. Das ist nicht so, wenn es können, was ich nicht schreit, die ich anders habe.
Right.
I'm looking for my attendance register.
Oh, okay.
It disappeared with the wind.
Good luck. Wind
down
there.
You scanner.
Yes, good.
I only know that word.
How do you know, the scanner? Sibongile? Don't you want to bless me? Don't you want to bless me?
Bless you.
And
the travel doesn't fit me in.
No, give me the jacket.
It's in the jacket.
No, give me the jacket. The little guy, the trousers will fit me. Give me the trousers and the jacket and you bless me with the shirt. You know if you bless someone, you're going to be blessed 100 times more.
If I just
blessed
her. She loves like a priest now. Like the chaplain when she started opening, I am welcoming you. I thought maybe he was going to say, in the name of Jesus.
Like the priest. Are you going to bless her? You're going to bring her tomorrow. Are you? I wanted to say. The thing is, if you want to change things around you, change the things around you.
Okay.
So if you want to bless someone, you bless someone. Please think of yes.
I'll think about it.
I'm now a politician. No man really.
Yeah, wash it and then I can leave it with trousers.
Come here. I don't know. It smells like my mother. Come here.
Hi, Bo.
She smells like my mother. Did you use aromatics?
Yeah.
Smells just like mommy. It smells like my mother. Aromatics, yeah. Thank you, I'll wait for it. Can I get it when? Just for me, can I get it when?
On the next meeting.
Okay, we'll bring the baggy one.
Yeah, we'll okay.
I'm waiting,
yeah.
I'm going to remind you on Tuesday.
Yeah, well,
really?
Like I was just checking the child.
You don't know anything, this is my style.
Oh, not
Hallelujah!
Thank you. Okay, honorable members, can we take this few minutes and deal with the issue in terms of the report by the Department on Illegal Mining? Honorable Mokoena, Honorable Matlala, Honorable Nyambi, I'm a Model D. Honorable Mandalay. Honorable Mukai.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, you'll have to indulge me because this is a subject extremely close to my heart. Like I've always said, I think the pro. As it turns out, I don't have it, darling. No, Che, you know the model that. Okay, let me just go back to the problem. The problem is that we're brewing a huge problem here. If we're not dealing with this issue of illegal mining in a proper manner, and the DRC is it's become a war zone. Literally, people killing each other every day on illegal mines, and you've extrapolated also other issues that may be affected, infrastructure, the fact that there's so much resources going into this thing. It's a huge problem, and I think, like I've always propagated, the best way to deal with it is to be proactive, and is to deal with it in a way that will also help us as a country. And that brings me to my second point: the fact that there are illegal miners continuing to mine says to me that there's something to be mined there. And that is a fact. How safe it is, then, that becomes a gray area. But it means that there is something there to be mined. PACT, which is an NGO in Washington, they have discovered that the hierarchy of mining goes that the big mines go in, right? They make the big profit, right? When they can't make the big profit, they then move out, right? And when they move out, government, it's easy for government to then say, oh no, it's mine, nothing can happen there. But as we've discovered it, through time, we then discover that, no, you can put in a smaller mine that has lesser profit to make to mine the area even further. Right? And that's how your Mutsipes and them, that's how they made their money in the beginning. But then there's a third tier, which we're now discovering, which is what they call artisanal miners, who, small scale, 3, 4, 5 people, who mine on open cast, they can mine literally in those small numbers. In underground, it becomes more complicated because there are bigger safety issues to deal with, you know, when you start mining gold and those other things. But that third tier is perhaps the thing that we need to explore at a much bigger level here in South Africa, because I think we rely on the ideology of the big mines as to what is mineable and what is not, right? So in a sense, we kind of now need to start thinking like the illegal miners. We need to start thinking like them and say, there's something to be mined there. How do we do it in such a way? Because also as government now, we have responsibility of safety and so on and so forth. How do we do it in such a way that people can still go in there, mine, and safely so? Right? Because what that does is it puts the mining industry back in our hands, especially that illegal mining industry. It puts it back in our hands. In Russia, it's almost law now that you, especially in the gold mine, the diamond mine and the coal mine, it's almost law that you have to go through the three tiers, the big mine, your SMMEs, and then the small scale miners, right? And I think the reason why it would help us as well is because it would sort out the resource issue. Is that we don't have to keep going there and put resources in closing the mine, and then the mine is reopened and so on and so forth. Let us mine it. Let us keep mining so that we are almost at the brink. And that's the philosophy that I would like us to start thinking. Because I think, in as much as you're telling us about legitimizing the certain mines, we're not doing it at a big scale. We've got 8 million people to employ in this country. And there's a lot of resource that we can still mine from and get revenue for the country. And so, so step by step, how I would do it is I would do a thorough audit of what do we have and what do we not have, right? To then say, okay, we have that mine there, we have declared this mine unminable. I don't know if there's such a word, right? But to then go and do a feasibility study, to then say, to go physically as a department to say, is this mine mineable or not? And I would even go to the extent of getting these people that you call syndicates and saying to them, would you mine this thing? And if you were to mine it, how would you mine it? Right? So they will tell you, they will give you their thinking as illegal miners. And then we legitimize it by putting in safety features and whatever is needed in there. Now, when I say that we need to formalize the illegal mining industry, I'm not saying that we must give licenses to people who are illegal, who have been doing work illegal. Those are criminals. We must lock them up. But what we then should be doing is to then go to CETAs and to train people. There's a program that I was watching just yesterday on one of the channels, and it literally shows you small scale miners, people who work in threes, fours, five people. But this is open cast now, which is a very different ball game. But those are the people that we should be supporting. Those are the ones that we should be training and giving them support in terms of whether it's safety features, whether it's expertise, professionals. But let's support those people. Let's put the resources into that, because we get something out of it as well as employing people. Instead of trying to close mines that are going to be reopened, and you know, it's money going down the drain. It's not assisting us. And I'm not saying that we should close down the program of locking up these people, but at the same time, we should be putting more resources into formalizing that small scale mining at a huge scale, though. At a huge scale, you're talking about that belt between Western area and Johannesburg. It's a huge belt. In Limpopo, it's huge. The number of people that we can employ through legitimizing those small scale mines in those areas is huge. It can make a huge difference for us. I'll pause here. Thanks.
I can see you're very passionate passionate about it. Don't learn from Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Matlala. I know the passion. But let's just agree, Honorable Members. For now, I don't think, I'm not preempting, but I'm just saying, as long as we understand the magnitude of this problem, surely with just one presentation, I don't think we'll resolve the issues. That one I can guarantee you. It actually means, at some point, it's a matter that we'll have to put you, Honorable Mzisa, put you aside, look at ourselves, each other, and say as a committee, what do we do, what do we suggest? Because now we've received presentation. So I'm just saying, Honorable Mukwena, don't worry. The one thing for sure, in as much as the department must continue to work, as long as we understand the magnitude of this problem, It's something that we can't shy away from confronting it head on. Honorable Matlala?
It's a big elephant. Normally they say there is an elephant in the room. It's a very serious thing. I'm concerned about the safety of... Anyway, Mzisa and the officials and the department, you are doing a very good job. Since 2014, when I arrived here, see 2014, there were some, it was because maybe we were not understanding some of the things that you are doing as the department. But from that time until now, the department is doing a very good job under the leadership of Baba Mzisa. You are doing a very good job. We can see there is a progress here, unlike before. You are doing a very good job. Continue doing that job. We'll support you. One of the things that Mzisa made mention of is that of rehabilitation of mines and sealing of mines. And I didn't hear you, Mzisa, Baba Mzisa, mentioning you partnering with the mining authorities. those who come and make business here in South Africa. After they've realized that they've charged a lot of mineral resources underneath, they leave. And now it will be the responsibility of the department to seal and rehabilitate such mines. These things is eating in the budget of the department. A lot of money, chowing, whatever you call it, chowing and eating in the budget of the department. And this lot of money is unfortunate the minister is not here, has left, because some of the things we're supposed to talk while he was still in this meeting, so that he must take it upon his authority to relevant structures to say these are the problems that the department is faced with. And the other thing, sister, you made mention of your safety. Of course, you are not safe. We went to Free State, and even the members of the committee were not safe. Honorable Lorimba, he called me during the night to say, hey, are you safe in one hotel where we slept? It was not fine. It was not okay. It was not fine. You couldn't sleep. It's a dangerous situation where these guys are operating. I'm told they are heavily armed and they work with so mafias this, of this world.
So this 10 rand deal is not new, ne? Okay.
Babam Sis, I didn't hear what you were saying. So it's a very serious matter, and we need, of course, that's what the chair says, it does not need 2-3 hours for the issues that the department is raising here. It needs a week, and get some other people who have know-how, who did this business before, and sit in a serious meeting, maybe a workshop of some sort, chair, to deal with this matter, because if we don't deal with this matter, the next generation will be sitting discussing the same thing that Mzisa has told us what must be done, and we're sitting here. I'm not sure whether you can answer some of this, Mzisa. Some is just an input and assisting some of the officials how to handle some of the issues, because I'm concerned with these mining authorities that they come and mine and leave with the department having some difficulties on how to seal, how much can we spend on this other project. Sealing and rehabilitation is a lot of money. One of the things that I want to raise, it's like it will be controversial, because people who are doing illegal mining here are not South Africans. Yeah, they are from Lesotho and whatever, Zimbabwe. I'm not sure whether maybe it will need a political intervention, this one, state by state, because us here, we can't do it. Unless or otherwise you arrest them, put them in jail, they release them the next day, their bail is 100 rand, which they have, because they are connected to mafias of this world. It's not only them, they are employed in these guys, they are doing work for somebody. So it will need bilateral talks, state to state relations, because us here, Mzisa, we tried our level best to arrest them. Tomorrow they are out, 100 rand bail, and they are doing the same thing, continue doing the same thing. One of the things that I shared with one of my comrades, which I wouldn't want to mention his name, is that we will have to seal this mine, and while these guys are down to drilling. Because it makes us very angry and sick. Because billions and billions of money, every financial year, they are getting out of South Africa to mafias of this world. These guys are not just here for Mahara. They are employed. In fact, they are employed. That's why it makes us some of us angry. That we must just see why these guys are doing work beneath the soil. Moreover, they are not South Africans. It makes us very angry, because even if Mzisa, you can arrest 10,000 of them, that is more than a community in the area where you come from, in Free State. They are more than a community. And imagine, if there are 10,000, they are going to have women in that area. They will need the state to provide them with RDP houses, which is not budgeted for. So our state, South Africa, will have a problem, a continuous problem, and will be accused from corner to corner to say this government is not doing it was supposed to do. So it's a very serious matter. It needs a bilateral talks, state by state, to deal with these illegal miners. I'll be very happy if it was South African doing illegal mining, because the money will remain in South Africa to pay some of the debts that we are faced with. The normally the what do you call it? Hashtag fish must fall and all these other things. So this money, in fact, was supposed to deal with that problem that we are faced with. Now, because they are not South Africans, illegal from somewhere, the money goes out of South Africa. We are left with huge problems here. Another one, shall you bear with me? I'm like that Mkweka here. I've learned from him that you can just give us some little time, Chair. Yeah, that? No, I'm trying to recruit Bontate Mokwena here to come to our... Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mm. The other one, Chair, relates to this conviction rate increase from 2 months to 8 years jail sentence for these illegal miners. It's too little. I'm not sure as to whether what is the law says, but you must increase it to a minimum of 40, 50 years. Well, we must be very serious, because if we don't do that, we will remain with these problems forever. The next parliament will come and sit with Mzisa here, and they will engage you with the same questions that we have asked you, Mzisa, for the past 5 years, and we will give them the same answers. So we are not going anywhere. So we must be serious here. The other one, Chair, relates to this, I'm concerned. I've raised this issue, but there was no answer while we were in Free State. The 750,000 that was confiscated underground by some law enforcement agencies in Free State. I asked them, where did you put the money? There was no answer. There was no answer, because some of us, we thought, some of them, they might have put them in some different bags and leave it. Miners, they don't care whether this money was submitted to them, to law enforcement agencies or not. They don't care. But law enforcement agencies, they didn't answer the question, sister, I'm asking you now. The 750,000, and including the 9 kg that was confiscated, the same first day, 9 kg of gold. Let me check. The last one, Chair, I might have dealt with my questions, but if need be, Chair, you allow us, we'll come back if you allow us to ask some follow-up questions. For now, Honorable Chair, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity
With the pace you are going, surely by that time we would have closed the committee meeting.
Oh, thank you, Chair.
Honorable, was it...
It was me, Chairperson.
Yes.
But Hoshi Umatlala has already taken the question, that the issue of 750, because I want to know whether, because we are facing a crisis, as he has mentioned, that the department has got a plan on how these monies are going to be used, because there are problems outside there, even the 50 million rand. But in all, I just want to appreciate the work that is done by the department, and we say keep it up.
Okay, I hope that 750, there, so that we can clarify that, because when we were in Free State, that 750, there was a question, where is the 750,000? And it was said it was kept by the company, né? And the question, the police just arrested people, then the question was, if those people come back and say, no, this is not the amount that you took from us. Actually, our amount was 800,000, which means then if you say 750, it's not ours. I know those cases, because that was the problem, that the monies were not kept being kept by police. They were being kept by the management of the companies. But two... Now, the 50 million rands, I think I did go and attend to that case. I don't know how far it is. No, it's not the 50, it's the 400 and
the Camden Park case. The problem is that some of these are just what is being discovered, but they are kept by the courts. Then only the court make the determination of how to dispense with if that individual is found to have acted contrary. So it's not necessarily that there will be money. I don't want tomorrow you find people coming to the department and say there is money kept in the department. When police confiscate anything that is an exhibit of crime, it will be kept, and if finally the person sinks, then there are procedures in terms of the criminal justice system that are being followed on how to dispense with the matter. Honorable Mandela, I saw you, Honorable Lorim.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I want to also, like my colleagues, appreciate the presentation made by DMR on illegal mining. But it comes on a sad day for Africa, Honorable Chair, and the developing countries, for the world trade, for BRICS, NATO and the UN, that the American people have trumped the vote. Donald Trump is now the president of the United States of America. I would want, Honorable Chair, before we get into the presentation, Bamsiza, to, you know, when we deal with illegal mining, you are facing two issues here. Illegal mining operations that are predominantly, and we can almost say 90%, are led by foreign illegals in South Africa, from Lesotho, from Zimbabwe, from Mozambique. We as a portfolio committee were exposed to that when we went out on various occasions. We went out to Gauteng, we went out to Free State in Harmony, and we found South Africans speaking out against this siege on our mineral by foreign illegals. And therefore, I would want to really understand on part of preserving these minerals for South African citizens, what is the department doing? Because you cannot have a situation where you have 10,000 people underground digging at our mineral resources, and there is not a clear strategy to combat that. All of this is going out and is leaving the country. So we would like to know, Honorable Chair, through you, as to what is the department doing to deal with that directly, to ensure that minerals of South Africa are utilized for the betterment of our people and our country. But the second issue associated with that is that, as Honorable Mokoena has said, that we haven't opened it up to small-scale operators. But, Honorable Chair, you first have to create an environment that enables small-scale operators to really operate and be able to get into that sector. Here we see an invasion of foreign illegals onto this space. And until we rid ourselves of that and creating a conducive space for South Africans to be able to operate as small-scale operators, you are not going to really see a win-win situation through this. So I'd like to understand, Honorable Chair, what DMR's processes are in place to ensure that the small-scale operators are able to get to this. There may be a lot of frustrations, Honorable Chair, as said by Honorable Matlala, that emotionally he would wish that we just close up these mines with all these illegals that are within. But I want to say that is not an ANC position. We would want to be very concerned about the lives of people, whether they be illegal foreigners or not. But it is key to us that we find solutions for the betterment of our people and for the betterment of South Africa. But also, Honorable Chair, we are not seen to have truly taken over the sector in terms of illegal mining operations. It has been seen to be at the hands of foreign illegals. And I know this might not be per se a sector that is in DMR's position, but may be sought to other departments. And therefore, I would like to know, Honorable Chair, what is DMR doing to ensure that through an inter-ministerial forum of safety and security, or the safety and security cluster, that these issues are dealt with? You know, when you have inspectors fearing for their lives to work in an environment, you have to ensure that you bring people that can counter that. And I don't think that, Honorable Chair, DMR has the capability of taking that fight to the illegal operators. If they are already weaponized with automatic rifles, then you need a force that can be able to counter that. So I would like to also know, Honorable Chair, what is DMR doing in terms of an interministerial forum to ensure that we are able to take over our mines, our mineral resources, and ensure that we bring stability and we bring a peace in those areas for our own small-scale operators to be able, Honorable Chair, to get into that sector. But if I may come to slide number six, Honorable Chair, it shows the picture, the illegal chrome mining in Limpopo. And if I can zoom in onto the picture, I think I see a couple of TLBs there or equipment. What's illegal about that photo? I mean, once there is equipment like that, that is not an that is not a legal operation. It's just people taking what is before them. And I think for me, it will pose questions of, what is DMR doing about that? Are these people left to continue with such an operation, or have you actually gone and taken that equipment off-site? And I would really want to know, what has the department done to pick into such operations? If you come to slide number nine, Honorable Chair, it says the department has established a stakeholder forum in the respective provinces, which implement measures to ultimately eradicate the illegal mining activities. Where are these forums located? I mean, I come from the Eastern Cape in the former Transkei, and I've never heard of such a forum. I would like to therefore know, Baumsisa, when communities are facing such challenges of illegal mining, where do they get the platform to air out their views and challenges. So where do these forums sit in our communities? And the second bullet point, Chair, says that the government has established the multi-enforcement agency, national coordination strategic and management team to coordinate government's efforts to fight illegal mining and trafficking of precious metals, including bringing about successful prosecution of illegal mining cases. What is the DMR doing to ensure that illegal mining is prosecuted? Because often the case, and we've seen it, Baumsiza, when we were in Gauteng, I mean, we saw a number of these illegal miners coming out with the produce they had for their day or 2 days' work. And even in the presence of the police, they walked away. In the presence of DMR, they walked away. There were no arrests. And even if they are arrested, they are in a day or two and they are out with a pat on the back. We would like to understand, yes, you say that there has been some arrests that have gone to as much as 8 years sentence, a jail sentence. But that is not prominent. You know, what you are seeing on a day-to-day is that these illegal miners are walking away with light charges of trespassing. So what is the DMR doing to ensure that you come with heavier penalties to this and ensure that you legislate harsher sentences to illegal mining? I will pause there, Honorable Chair, and allow other members to have their say. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Lorema, but before that, you know, I come from KZN. I'm coming from KZN. That's why I come from KZN. Now, there's something that there's something that is very concerning there. When someone, a politician, received a brown envelope, we then start to get concerned what could be contained in that envelope, except if it's declared. But I can only confess, not confirm, that I did see a brown envelope, but I don't know what is in the brown envelope. So that tomorrow, I'm not told that it was distributed in the committee. So, Honorable Lerima.
Mr. Chair, I'm reliably informed that it's documents, but, you know, perhaps some of those documents can be shared with the rest of the committee. this business, we've been told, of illegal gold mining is worth like 5 billion rand a year. That's a lot of money. And it's been going on for a lot of years. This National Coordination Strategic Management Team, which doesn't seem to be a very meaningful term, a whole lot of words thrown together, but that's been around a long time. If I'm right, that's been around for, what, 7, 8 years? Something like that? More? Where are the bigger risks? Yeah, we're talking about some busts and some court cases, but there don't seem to be very many of them. Would it be possible for us to get a list of results from this task team? At a top level, what's been done? We all know that there's problems with the guys actually doing the mining, and some of them get arrested, and we heard Honorable Mandela say how they let off with, you know, a warning and so on. That's a slightly different issue. But where are the big fish in all this? I see lots of effort. When we went to the department's headquarters in Pretoria, we sat in a room with more police generals and national security agents than I've ever seen in one place before. There's all this effort, there doesn't seem to be much result, and I'd like to know, to have an opinion on why not. Like my honorable colleagues Mokoena and Mandela, I see the logic in allowing and legalizing some form of artisanal mining. I would like to know whether the department is actively engaged on changing the way it deals with those small miners. Is it looking at regulatory or legislative changes? What might those be, and when might we see them? The gold being refined, it is interesting to hear about it being refined by some small jewelry operations. How tight is the security around Rand Refinery? Are we sure it's not happening there? And otherwise, is it going out of the country to be refined, and if so, do we know where? This issue of the actual miners getting off with a slap on the wrist, we've talked before about there being insufficient legislation to actually arrest them and process them and punish them. Can we expect to see something along those lines as the MPRDA goes through the NCOP? Is anybody going to propose that, to your knowledge? I mean, does the department have plans to do that? And finally, if you'll indulge me with a Gauteng-centered question, those mine dumps across the highway from Diepkloof in Soweto to the north of Dobsonville, around the Doornkop mine at Chepisong. Do mines have plans to reprocess those at the moment? Or could those be a possible site to look at artisanal operations? Thank you.
So, there's someone, Honorable Lorema, in the religious cycles called the big fish. So you are not meaning that big fish. You're just talking about a big fish, not the big fish. Okay. Just to share with you this frustration that Honorable Mandela is talking about happened when we were in Gauteng. I don't know whether he still remembers it. When we were rushing, and he was in the forefront chasing those illegal miners. So when he shouted at them to stop, they said, no, this one can't arrest us. And we asked, why? I said, no, Usmarlo. Now, they ended up taking photos with Usmar. You can Toliga, the one who's next, give. But they saw him as an in-law in Mozambique. So there was no way you could arrest him. So I don't know now, today he's bold. That day he was just weakened to say, you are the last one to arrest us. Honorable Mseza.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and all members. I think with the sentiments that have been shared by the Honorable members, we fully agree with all the sentiments that have been shared. It is a big challenge, and I think I must underline the word big in the sense that it's not a South African problem. You've related to other African states, and as I've highlighted, if we don't deal with the market, because I assure you, some of these precious metals are going to big Western countries. If we don't deal with that fundamentally, we'll still as Africa, have a challenge. And secondly, in terms of what are we doing in terms of the strategy, I'll try Honorable Mokwena and also touch on the request by Nkosi, Honorable Mandela. Fundamentally, what are we doing as government to deal with this at the high level, the small scale level as well? At the high level, I think, or macro level, as a department, it's important that we continue to promote investment into our mining sector at that level, you know. And hence, through the minister, and we've been appreciative of what the PPC has been doing, is to drive and to deal with the challenges that the investors are raising as constraints for investment into our sector, you know, including the legislation and the policy issues. I think at that level, it's important for us to deal with it. Secondly, it's important for us to also to try and find a way of how we diversify the markets, so to speak. You know, so we have to drive the NDP, because it's, and the 9-point plan, it speaks to the issue of beneficiation, because if at long term we'll beneficiate locally as well, you know, we'll find a way of diversifying and increasing the demand into our minerals, and obviously get job creation going. Another issue that at the high level that we are dealing with as government is the infrastructure built. I always say, honourable members and colleagues, that you can turn around anywhere where you look. The mines are involved. If you look at electricity, the mines are involved. If you look at paint, mines are involved. Concrete, building, roads, it's mining. Power, Eskom power built, mining is involved because we provide the minerals, the coal, everything that we actually provide. The jewelry, mining is involved. You know, makeup, glass, you know, these, mining is involved because ultimately the raw material is mined to come to this particular point. So we have to find a way of increasing that demand for this to take place. You know, I think for us it's critical at that level. For us, we drive the government imperatives that will make sure that the economy grows and people are getting employed. I think there we are supporting that as department. Now, at our level, as a department, we agree with the small scale miners. We have a small scale unit. Their key focus is to promote and support the growth of that sector, because we believe that if we support them effectively, as Honourable Mokoena has said, and Honourable Ndela and the other honourable members, we will see some of these activities coming down. You know, so we are supporting them. We are having workshops with them. We are giving them technical work. We are working together with IDC where we can support with the finances. We are looking at that. So we are doing that. But I must also caution honourable members, and I'll make a classical example that we were involved in. Some time ago in the Barberton area, through this small-scale mining framework, we decided to legalize a certain area that was a illegal gold mining area, where they were mining illegally. Then we've decided as government to look. Probably it's viable, this area, to be mined legitimately. Let's find a way of supporting them technically. We provided equipment at that time. We were paying their salaries at that time. We employed a coordinator to be their mine manager at that particular time. The only thing that they had to do, the gold-bearing material that they produced at that operation, is to make sure that it gets to the coordinator and we take it to one of the mines that we've identified to be processed and so on, sold to sustain that operation. It started well, you know. It started well, and we were paying and they were bringing the gold. But later on, they realized one thing. They were not making money as they used to. Because at that time, they were making about 20,000 a week, an individual, from illegal mining operations, you know. But now we are paying them a stipend of far less than that, because it's a salary now, you know. And the fact that, the thing that complicates it is there are syndicates involved, you know. So then they started to bring waste, you know, as gold, you know, they'll take from the reef and say, this is gold mine. But when we process, there's no gold bearing material there. You know, we are mindful of that as well, that we must really clearly indicate that there are serious criminal activities involved. You can't legalize criminal activity, no matter what you like, because their main approach is to make money there. You know, and we are dealing with human trafficking. In fact, Honorable Mandela and Honorable Chairperson, one of the areas that we also took honorable members to, I also speak to the people who are digging. I was asking the gentleman, where are you from? And he tells me the country, you know. Then I ask him, but who told you that there's a place in Roodepoort where you can dig for gold bearing material? He says, no, I was employed by these kingpins. And I asked them, who? And he obviously won't tell because he fears for his life, you know. And he says, but they are paying me money every day. I think they've been paying him 150 rands at that time, you know. So some people, they bring people in to do the work for them. And in fact, some of them have been saying to us that they are held hostage. Some of them, they are there for more than a month with people guiding them not to escape, you know. So I think it's a big problem. So we will definitely, we will strive to deal with with this matter. And also, thank you, Honourable Matlala and colleagues and honourable members for the sentiments shared on what we do, other severe constraints. But we'll continuously do that work that we'd like to assure you. You spoke about why are the mines not rehabilitating, the big mines are not rehabilitating. I think the biggest challenge is it's a legacy matter. Because before the MPRDA, there was no legislation that forced the mines to do concurrent rehabilitation. That's why we have such a huge list of unrehabilitated mines, including asbestos mines and so forth. Before, the previous legislation didn't force. There was no NEMA at that time and so forth. You know, it didn't force until the new dispensation and starting. But now we are left as the current government with that legacy to deal with. And we have to find the resources to deal with it. And there are substantial resources, as Minister has indicated. But we are prioritizing the areas, especially where there are communities that are affected. We are going there, we are rehabilitating, we are closing holes. So we are working. But now we are striving as well to force the current operators, where possible, to do concurrent rehabilitation. Especially, obviously, some of the coal mines, they can do concurrent operations, but some of the mines will have to finish first before you start closing off. So we have a unit which we call the Enforcement and Compliance Unit that will help us. We are appointing people that will help us in that regard. And in terms of the people not doing, we agree, honourable members, that unfortunately most of the people who are doing the digging itself are not South Africans. And hence through that NCSMT, they've been helping us through the Home Affairs and DERCO to take this matter to the neighbours, because there are those engagements that are taking. They've been to Zimbabwe. In terms of diamond mining, they've been to countries like Botswana, probably Namibia as well. So there is, you know, regional interaction to try and work together in this particular. So I think that continues there. We believe that it will help us in the long term. And in terms of the conviction rate, we fully agree as well. We can do better. From 2 months to 8 months is not, but we assure you, when we started with this process about 7 years or 8 years ago, people were left off with 50 rand trespassing fines. And kingpins were not arrested. Generally, they were the lower people who were really arrested. It was not kingpins who were arrested. So now, at least it's encouraging that it has moved from 2 months to 8 months. But what we've been doing as a department and the other departments sitting on the NCSMT, we looked at our respective legislation. Let's say we look at the MPRDA, we look at the Mine Health and Safety Act. We say, to assist the NPA and the police, the investigators, to say, you can use these provisions of the law to strengthen the charges. You know, to look beyond trespassing, you can use that provision, look at provision. Similarly, let's say maybe with Department of Environment, they will say you can look at that legislation, this legislation, to strengthen, and that has helped us to move it from 2 to 8 months. But we can do better, and there's work. There's a task team that basically looks at the legislation and how we can also strengthen it. The issue of the 750,000, I think it was covered, and the money is covered by also by the chairperson. Honourable Mandela, I think on the issue of the foreigners, we truly agree, but we are engaging with the regional countries through the NCSMT, and we have taken also this matter to the UN through the NCSMT as well. And at least there's some encouraging work that is happening there. As a department, what is our strategy? I think our strategy, Honorable Mandela, as I've said, I think at the macro level is to continuously for us to promote and make sure that all the barriers to mining in the country, we are dealing with them. Working together with the respective stakeholders. Because at that level, if there's no investment in mining, people then make a plan, you know. And as I was even saying that we are promoting legitimate mining, like the chrome mining that we were looking at. We are looking at issuing a mining right in that area. Obviously, correctly so, the entities that have applied. So that, you know, there's a legitimate operation that is that is taking place there to prevent the stealing of our minerals. We are also driving the issue of rehabilitation. For us, it's important that we drive vigorously with the financial allocations that we have, you know, currently. We are doing that. But we can have more. I think if we have more financial resources, we can do better, quicker. So I think we are looking at that, and we are obviously issuing mining licenses to assist with it. Now, the other avenues that we are dealing with this matter is through the respective clusters, especially the economic cluster. They are looking at the illicit economy that our country is facing, and this also forms part of that. You know, so there are discussions by the government as a whole to say how do we deal with the issues of illicit economy as the country, and we are participating obviously with the NCSMT as I indicated. There's intelligence there as I indicated. There's hawks, and they have arrested syndicates, honourable members. Last year, as honourable Chairperson has indicated, they've arrested the syndicates. This year they've arrested in syndicates as well. So we are seeing an encouraging trend of arresting at a high level, but not only syndicates, but also mine management. You see, there are mine managers who are involved. There are senior officials in the mines who are also involved, who are, because they are making their own sector there, selling food, moving monies around, you know. So they are making those arrests as well. I think for us is encouraging. And in terms of where are the forums, Honorable Mandela, we've prioritized the key areas where we've been having challenges. For instance, the Gauteng, the Free State, there's a forum. Northern Cape, there's also a forum. And we've actually been looking at Mpumalanga. We've been looking at Northwest, but there, the police themselves, including in the Eastern Cape, we are working together with the police where we can take these matters to. And what we'll do, Honorable Mandela, if you agree as well, probably what we can leave the contact details of our regional offices if there are cases like that and people they want to involve. They want to get involved in those forums, then they can contact the regional managers and the principal inspectors where we are engaging to see how we work together with communities. But we'd like to assure you that in some of these forums we're involving communities. But I must also caution the fact that because this is a dangerous field, I'll make an example. In the Free State area, one of the forums, there was a sensitive matter that was discussed. Because in that forum, this is the police, the mines, ourselves, the community, the NPA sat on that forum. One of the colleagues who was sitting in that forum said, look, we are working on this case and we've arrested this campaign. And normally we try to keep those discussions very confidential. It leaked, you know, to other kingpins to say, such and such was saying this about you or about that other individual. Now, the person who mentioned that thing in that forum received a call from the kingpins to say, we hear that you are saying A, B, C, and D. You must be careful. We know where your wife works. We know why your kids go to school. You know, so that's what I'm saying, very dangerous as well. And in fact, some of the union people, they don't want to be seen to be part of those forums because they fear they're for their lives. So it's a very dangerous area. So, but we are clear that the police are looking at this and to help improve on this. And the other thing, Honorable Mandela, at one stage we were not communicating effectively the arrest. You know, it was never in the media, the arrests that have been made, especially at the syndicate level. But growing, we have seen, we've agreed through the NCSMT, and we can see now there's more. That's why you'll see on TV, if they make arrests, they'll say they've arrested a person with 50 gold worth 50 million. Now it's coming through. Before, it never was in the public space. Okay, and Honourable, I hope I've covered your question on the bigger fishes, the big fish, as you clearly indicated. Yes, we can do better, but I think it's complicated. You know, they are very smart, The modus operandi, they make sure that it's difficult for you to evidence that you can corner them with. You know, and it's not only local syndicates, it's international syndicates as well. So the police, they are also, they make sure that they don't compromise the case, you know, and the intelligence. However, we are seeing more and more of the syndicates that are being arrested, working with other law enforcement agencies globally. I think we are getting there. In terms of legalizing the SMMEs, the small scale mine, we give permits where we can. Mining permits are issued to an area of 1.5 hectares. So on those areas, we normally provide permits. But I must also indicate that, you know, the one biggest challenge with our SMMEs is the financial resources. Because if you're being issued with a mining right, you must have an environmental authorization. In other words, once you start mining and you finish mining, you must retain that land to the condition that you found in. So I think the other challenge is that, you know, they find it difficult for them to get to that stage of rehabilitating into its stage. Now, if we are not assertive on that, that cost comes to the state. If you only issue a right and people just take the minerals and leave the place like this, in other words, it's the state that has to rehabilitate that ground. So we're also looking at that on how we can help. And in terms of rent refinery, we, through the NCSMT, especially with the issue of buying coins, and we did engage the rent refinery. They did presentations at the NCSMT, and we're working together with them as well. And through the precious metals regulator, they are going to these jewelry shops, the smaller refineries, because that's where this is taking place. In terms of the legislation, we have looked at this at the MPRDA bill, but what we've done through that small task team that falls within the NCSMT, we are looking at other legislation, not only ours. But I think it's also important that I must highlight this matter, honorable members, that we've looked at the ports, you know, because one of the challenges is that the police have been, or law enforcement agencies were experiencing, that the gold was exported as scrap metal before. What they used to do, they'll get, you know, they steal the, you know, steel, copper wires and so forth, and they burn it with the gold-bearing material, and they export it through our ports or the airport as scrap metal. Now, the officials in the ports could not recognize that there's gold in there. So working together with the DTI, we came up with a guideline on exporting scrap metals, firstly, and also there was training that was done through the NCSMT to the port officials as well, to show them, you know, if umuntu aphethe umhlabathi or something that looks at sand, they should be able to identify or differentiate between sand and gold-bearing material. You know, so there is work that we've also done. We are working together. And also with SARS, as I've indicated, the recent case of Kempton Park, it involved the syndicate claiming VAT. So they will sell, they'll buy gold coins for 1 billion. They get all jewelry, they heat it up, and they sell it back, and they get 14% VAT back. Those are the allegations, you know. So we are working together with SARS, and hence that big arrest took place. So it's a lot of things that we are working together. Also, the strengthening of our entry points, although still it's a challenge, but it's something that we are also working on. The mine dams, Honorable Alorima, lastly, yes, they are prioritized based on the grade and the commodity price. In other words, they'll do an exploration of the dump and say how much grade is there, and then based on that grade, is it viable to exploit the area? So you'll see, I think it's more clear if you drive along the major highways. You'll see in some parts is water, pressurized water jets that have been used. They normally use water, you know, to process that. But we have encouraged all the mining companies. Some of them have gotten licenses for them to process those what we call slime dams. So there is encouragements of the department, and we are grateful that the mines are dealing with it. But I think in closing, we hear what the honourable members are saying, and we believe that maybe it will also help that they should be that big workshop, or so to speak. We invite also the law enforcement agencies, and they say what are they doing. But some of the stuff is very sensitive. We are unable to say in the public space what are the operations that are taking place. That's why we tried, even with our presentation, not to go deep because of the sensitive nature of the work that is being done. So, but I think it might help that call the law enforcement agencies as well, and that they can broadly talk on some of the issues that I've been highlighting. Thank you, honourable members.
Okay. My problem is the time.
Chair, it was just to ask whether it would be possible to get a list of big fish caught, maybe in the last, I don't know, 2 years or something. I don't know how you describe a big fish. I can leave that to you. But I think I would certainly be interested, maybe other people in the committee, just to have a look and see how many of these cases are or have been dealt with.
Can I make this summary? That, one, I know it's going to be quite a hectic one, so that the committee can have an informed discussion on this matter. That one, just get what could be the key areas of legislation interventions that can be made in order to deal and cap this problem of illegal mining. Remember, I always make this thing that that court ruling had made a directive to the department to develop a legislation. I understand the angle that you come from in relation to sister departments on what, in terms of the legislative developments. On your side is your MPRDA, others there is NEMA, and so forth. But there is one issue that was raised. That issue was specifically the fact that there is a need to develop a tighter legislation to deal with this problem of illegal mining. Secondly, can we in that process also deal with the issues that I think they emerged in one of those discussions that were raised? What are the necessary tools that are required to make a determination? Amongst other things was the fact that when we had that discussion, police raised a concern that there is no concrete system or a verifying system that they have at the level of the police station. But in terms of, is it the Criminal Procedure Act, it talks about 48 hours. Otherwise, if the person within 48 hours, you can't put something, then those people are supposed to be released. And they were saying that at the level of our police stations in those areas, there is no immediate center where they can make a determination of the commodity, whether the commodity is received legally or illegally. Thirdly, look on the issue. I think is it from DTI or public enterprise? There was something more like a provision that was being made. Is it public or public works in relation to accountability on the site, which was more of an argument because the law says says that you are innocent until proven otherwise. Therefore, the burden of proof lies with the accuser. Now, there was something that was saying on this thing of precious metals, especially your steel and other related, because it was based on what was happening with the cables with Eskom, to say anyone who's found to have this material must then be able more like to provide proof of being licensed to have that particular material. Whether is there any consideration that is being made in relation to this? Remember, in the department, you've got what we call the regulator, which is supposed to be much more intense in doing this. So I'm just saying on this part. But can we also get a more detailed analysis of what constitutes the core of illegal mining? For an example, there is the problem of your derelict and ownerless mines that are becoming a center of attraction for these individuals to make the entry point. But there's the one that even the industry is complaining that because sometimes when you talk of illegal mining, we assume people who don't have, but people that this, it has even gone to what you have in terms of the underground network. It has gone to areas where they are supposed to be falling under legal mining, which threatens your very same legal and official mining. Can you get that breakdown of what is it that precisely constitute illegal mining? It could be something that one member was raising here, that illegal mining could be on the basis that I didn't get all the other requirements to wait for all these formal processes and the cost implication, but there is a commodity here, I see. It's not that because we shouldn't create, it's not that Honorable Mandela was raising to say, look, here is a, what is this thing, the infrastructure to do mining, and these people are doing it. It's not something that would say it's not there. They may only be doing it only running short of a license. I'm just making an example. Can we look on those, what you would call your low-hanging areas, where we could identify here, maybe the problem is compliance with the environmental laws, this, the compliance with this, but concretely, this can be done by just fast-tracking the processes in relation to that. One issue also that I think is important, I don't know, that task that Honorable Mukwena was saying could be cumbersome, but I think it can also... You see, for now, as I sit here, we all understand the magnitude of the problem. But is there a way that we can quantify? For instance, I was sitting here in when you said here KZN is the coastline sand problem. But just recently, with that case of Tune in Pongola, that were in a derelict old mine. So it may not necessarily be... It's not a high tension issue. So that we separate where I can also make an example, because as a rural person, to some degree, some of these things you say is subsistence, but for a small town where they need the sand or gravel, the cost of applying for the license to do so could mean that for the rest of the year, if I deliver this thing, I would need to just deal with the cost of accessing the license. So we weigh also the cost of a license vis-a-vis the commodity deliverables as far as the person making returns out of it, which could mean that an individual, rather than to go the open route, will take this route. Then there are these areas that we then have to zoom to. I would say you have to zoom to those areas where they threat to life. We have to make a separation. Threat to life because of they have tend to be a gangster at area of activity, but there are those that are risky in the context of being a threat in terms of your geological or geographic development. So if you build a human a settlement or whatever, then there's threat, or there's a threat to the roads, the road networks, and so forth. So that we draw this thing. But finally, the point I think is Honorable Lorima was raising, because it may just be an assumption. What is the actual estimated cost to the GDP that we are talking about here? But linked to that, what is it that is required? For instance, some of these things you say is the pillars. Now, Honorable Matlala is gone. I was going to say, no, we can't have a government that seals people alive. That's impossible. It's impossible to agree to that. But can we deal with this thing so that we know? For instance, I'm of this view and advocate that as we continue to make cuts and preferences in other areas, if we don't develop and design mechanisms that are going to generate income, we won't be able to supply the services side of government. So can we get what is it that a measurement that would say in order to deal effectively, including the issue that honorable members have been raising, I think cut across from the passion that Honorable Mukwena demonstrated there is what I would call the softer part that says, make a consideration of what we'd call developing small-scale mining, and to what extent can you facilitate that process? What are the key strategic institutions that can come in? For an example, do we need to engage with small business so that in the work that they do, they incorporate this exercise? But also look at the other issues. The point, Honorable Lorim, I must say this thing, I think it's you who raised this thing. The point was simple in one of these areas. That high level, if you remember, I'm not too sure, I think we were in Mpumalanga. I think there is in Mpumalanga, and no, it's not mine, surely. There is in Mpumalanga, and there is in the Free State. Even in Gauteng, one thing that became common is that most of these people, they take this as a voluntary exercise that they can go as and when they wish to go. They don't seem to be a compelling. In fact, if you remember, in Free State, they said, in some of this, the coordinating team, police, maybe they'll just send someone from a police station who does not have powers to take decisions, to just go and represent me. So I think that question, can we deal with how do you make this multi-task exercise to be effective and be taken seriously? Because the major problem was that some of these people, they don't come for the whole year, or they come once a year and they're not taking it. But can we look, and I know this will sound sensitive, can we look at the cost to life of this exercise? Let's take that example of, that's what made this Inkosi to be a victim in the social networks. let's just make a hypothetical example. Let's take the case of where there are intervals, I always say, they take people in installments. It's going to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. In between, probably in a week or in 2 weeks, but when we were there, just that week, that day when we arrived was on Monday, they had already retrieved 3 bodies below. You see? And you've got your lang lacht. Can we have a real and a serious quantification? I know that's why I said it's sensitive. What could be the general cost to life of this exercise? Because I think the manner in which we are handling it, forget about those who are left on the field when there is an exchange with police and so forth, and all those things. Because the issue, honorable members, finally we will have to make a conclusion on is to how far can the department can go in terms of its mandate. Because the risk is quite high that we are dealing with an issue here where the final authority, for an example, I don't give you a license, I can come. Generally, if you are talking about, what do you call this thing? Well, some of us, Department of Labor. All right, the Department of Labor, it finds that you are non-compliant, it issues you with a notice and so forth. The problem with illegal mining is that it is not about non-compliance. It is about defiance. Now, you can't give me a car that the car is not on the road, you take out the disc and then say we're arrested. That requires law enforcement agencies. To what extent can we talk about a reinforcement of a parallel process that deals with the mandate of the department, but also the parallel support that from time to time it requires to take, including on enforcing. One official, I think it's Mr. Rappel, he did share and said, you know, Chair, at some point when we went to close one of those mines, the first thing those people said, no, don't worry, can come in. And when the staff came in, the officials came in, they locked the gate. And when they locked the gate, they ran away, and they locked them inside. What they didn't know was that when they come back, what they will do. So it to what extent that issue poses threats to the officials of the department in executing their duties. So that if it must become a compulsory exercise, that they require more services That will make it easy for them. We can look at that. Then can we agree, honorable members? I know you are generous, Babumsis. Yeah. Can you then make that commitment? When do you think we can get this information? So that we then, as committee, deal with the actual facts that are now going to be presented in front of us and take our own decision on how best we think this issue can be attended to, and then allow the debate. It doesn't mean in the meantime, Mabum says, you are not continuing with your interventions. That one. We may also come to a conclusion that we must give also more audience to other stakeholders to assist us in the process going forward. Can't you agree on that one, honorable members? It still means you are still going to keep me...
Honorable Chairperson, I think we agree we can make the information available, but we would like to plead that some of the information will be sensitive. It's sensitive information, and what might help as well is it assists to have an engagement, a one-on-one engagement to explain. Honorable Chairperson spoke about the categories of illegal mining. We can clearly indicate what are the categories of illegal mining and the possibilities in terms of legitimizing some of these operations. But I think quickly, Chair, just to say that through the SAPS, we do have a fingerprinting system that we are running. In other words, they can tell you where is the gold coming from. They can tell you that it comes from Free State, Carltonville, or they can really tell you. There is a project now we have been working on that particular system. And also, Honorable Mukwena, before I also agree, before I forget, the question that you posed to say around Gauteng, can we mine? There are areas that we can mine, but as I've clearly indicated, some of the areas that are within industrialized and areas with houses. And we've issued rights, I must admit. And then blastings start to take place, communities complain. No, we had those complaints in the Rivalry area. I must admit that it has happened. So there are those challenges. But in other areas, in Gauteng, you can't mine because basically they are mining stability pillars. If you're going to take them out, they will just collapse. But there are areas that we know could be exploited, and we do issue rights. And all the other information, Honorable Chair, will strive to make sure that we categorize the areas that have... as much as we can. Thank you.
Okay. Now, include even those risk factors. Quite soon I was told, because I traveled between KZN and Joburg, I was told the easiest route in the near future might be to fly to Joburg, even if you're from KZN, because the N3 is under threat. I'm not saying that. But the issues that are sensitive, let's find a better way to manage. But this committee has to make a determination in the final analysis. Honorable members, having done so, with your agreement, can we now go to the minutes of the 26th? You see, I nearly said of November. We are still going to November. 26th of October. Can we deal with page 1? Don't cry. Page 2. Page 4. bullet point two. Okay. Mkumundlovu is the one that I'm not sure. So yeah, I'll have to check this one. Mkumundlovu is in Pietermaritzburg. I'm trying to check what could have been the issue. Page 5. On the bullet, second bullet, the committee need to get an update on the Mkungundlovu and Kolobeni matter. Apandu kuthi kune parcel ese Mkungundlovu ngeke sikuphikiseke kulokho. Why remember the Kolobeni matter? Yeah. Okay. Page 6. Oh, it's Ngwe whatever. It was on your cases. Ngwe Nyama. I think that's what you wanted to raise on Mkungundlovu. Yeah. It's Ngwenyama and Kolobeni matter, I remember. Okay. Page 7. I'm not sure on page 7 whether we said to consult or to request the department to fast track the process in NetLeg, because we were not represented in NetLeg. It will be difficult as a committee. I think we were gonna request the department to ask for the process at NetLeg to be fast tracked in relation to the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Bill. Are we done? Page 8. Any mover with the corrections? Honorable Mandel.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 26th of October 2016 with the corrections effected. Thank you.
Honorable Nyambi. Thank you, Chairperson. I second.
Any matters arising? Any matters arising? Okay. Minutes of the 2nd November. Page 1. Is Hoshi Matlala properly placed from which part is coming from in that list of those present? Page 2. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. No, sir. Page 5, bullet point 1. The position of the DG, the department is in the process of finalizing, not is finalized. Otherwise, they would have introduced the DG. Is in the process of being finalized. Am I correct, Babam says?
Yes.
Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Any move of the minutes? Honorable Piginini.
Thank you very much. I move here to accept the these minutes of the 2nd November 2016. It's a true reflection of what we discussed.
Honorable Seconder.
Honorable Chair, let's clarify something before. It is recorded that the Honorable Minister Pekinini is accepting nominations. Did you hear him? We heard him saying yes, he accepted nominations. Which nomination? That is from next to me. Yes, I decided to join the guys on my left. So, suffice to say, Chair, yes, I will second the Honorable Pekinini on the...
On his nomination?
No. On the minutes of the 2nd of November 2016 with amendments. Thank you.
Okay. Any matters arising? There is one. Honorable Babum says on the opening. If with the pace we are going, we will go up to February next year. And on the 5th of February, it will be exactly a year since that incident at Lily Mine took place. I'm just appealing for all of us a little bit of sensitivity. And if... As we project, if we happen around, because there is something that says in the program which we still need to finalize and fine-tune and get clarity on. If we happen to go to Mpumalanga, amongst other things, on this proposed, because we cut off the one in December. If we happen to be in Mpumalanga, we might be seen to be insensitive to go and do other issues and then pass where this incident has taken place. Can I request, it may not be now, but if we happen, that just before the end of this year, that you come and brief us again on the progress made so far, and so that we can then be able to take a view as a committee on how to deal and handle this issue. I know we're catching you offside for now, off guard, not offside, by the way. On that note, any other matter, Honorable Nyambi, on the minutes?
No, Chair.
Okay. Okay, having done so, can I now give Matlala, honorable? Don't say I didn't start by honorable. I'm just starting with your surname and then give you that you are honorable. Ukomre Tunyambi, anyway, it's fine. It's still the same. Honorable Nyambi wanted to make an announcement. Can I then give it to Honorable Nyambi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, on behalf of the committee, I just want to inform the committee that today is the last day to be with Uayanda, who boss way to la committee. As the committee, we wish her the best for the days that she's going to sit at home, and she must enjoy those days. And with this little token, we just to say to Ayanda, we welcome the incoming baby, and we hope he or she should be the one, should be the member of this committee. Thank you very much.
Get in it.
She must be blessed.
We commit.
Where I come from, there used to be people called young pioneers. I don't know whether in the committee there is something called mutantis. But it seems, well, I think on behalf of the committee, let's wish Ms. Boss a safe journey into the delivering of an increased number of the South African population. As to how many of those numbers, we don't know. She has not shared with us. We wish her well, and hopefully we're still going to see her back to this committee next year. So I think it's a pleasure that we have worked with her. You are not resigning, obviously. So when you are given that token, it doesn't mean when you come back you're going to get any other thing. Just go home, enjoy, and we will work very well. As from next week, we'll be working with SIA. And also we'll give that opportunity for some ropes. But I'm sure he knows that we hold the ropes. You don't have to learn. You hold the ropes and go on the field. And I hope he's going to find it much enjoyable, but also developing to be in the committee. Lastly, we still remain with the, we have to finalize the report, honorable members, of our visit in the Free State. We will have to find a way, where do we locate it, because the procedure says you can't be granted another oversight if you have not dealt and submitted your report for the previous oversight that you have undertaken. So we'll have to deal with that. On that score, we are all released. See you next week. Thank you very much.
Uh-uh.